When you're working two jobs and living in a tent, when a house costs $1 million and you can't pay the rent, when politicians say they'll help but it keeps getting worse each time the landlord lobby pulls the strings of the purse, when the human right to housing isn't even part of the debate, you know you're living in a failed state. Citizens are spending half their lives locked up in a prison for trying to survive. When laws must be broken just to have a place to stay. When the prisons pay the senators to look the other way. If you have to be a criminal to put food upon your plate, you know you're living in a failed state. When you're facing climate breakdown, when trees are all on fire, when half the country's underwater, when a climate change denier runs the nation, and the opposition party votes for oil rigs and pipelines, it's not so much a country as it is a corporation. Buckling under its weight, you know you're living in a failed state. The only thing your leaders can think to do is attack. Bipartisan consensus that we need to spend $700 billion before the year's end on a military budget to make America great. You know you're living in a failed state. When almost every day some psycho with a gun has to open fire on a crowd before it's done. When the music festival becomes a free fire zone, and all they can say is it's okay now he was acting alone. Buy some armor, pray to God, and hide behind a gate. You know you're living in a failed state. You know you're living in a failed state. You know you're living in a failed state.
Thank you. And this is Kamala Emanuel from Brisbane, Australia.
Hi.
Musician who highlights as a women's doctor. Moonlights is a highlights. Moonlights. It's one of the signs of early Alzheimer's when you start getting your words all confused and then forgetting basic words. That's another thing that keeps happening. But I think it's the cannabis. I'd like to believe it's the cannabis, because I can do something about that. You know?
So we've got a friend. We've got a friend in Australia who he lives in Sydney. And he has, I'm just going to tell David's anecdote for him.
It's good. Mix it up.
Yeah. He has this habit of writing a quote from the words of a governor, a former governor of the colony of Sydney. Back in the day, you know, a couple of hundred years ago. And because he writes this quote and puts it on the statue of this governor, who's found all over the place, there's places named after this guy all around the country and particularly in New South Wales. When he puts this quote and sticks it on the statue, he gets in trouble. He gets banned from the city. He goes to court and gets prosecuted for sticking these words up. Yeah. You'll find out why.
Lachlan Macquarie was a Scotsman who signed up to serve the British crown. He traveled around the world to America. Not long after that, he headed down to his post in New South Wales to be the governor, to expand colonial rule. Half of Sydney was named after him. Everybody learns his name in school. Just don't put Macquarie's words beneath his statue. If you do, his defenders might arrest you. Lachlan Macquarie was a governor who opened schools and hospitals. His aim was to civilize a nation in the interests of himself and capital. He was a raging alcoholic and a bad businessman, but you could say he did his best to broaden the global dominion of a project they call the Christian West. Just don't put McCarvey's words beneath his statue. If you do, his defenders might arrest you. Lachlan McQuarrie stole children from their parents and never gave them back. And when Gundagara and Darawal people resisted, he ordered his soldiers to attack. He said, make the Aborigines your prisoners. Shoot them and hang them from the trees, so as to strike fear in the surviving natives in order to bring them to their knees. Just don't put Macquarie's words beneath his statue. If you do, his defenders might arrest you. Just don't put Macquarie's words beneath his statue. If you do, his defenders might arrest you.
This is, last week was the 30th anniversary of the some protests in Copenhagen that took place in the wake of the second vote for the Maastricht Treaty. That was just around the time I first visited. Rejected in 1992. Most Danish voters were afraid, they already knew that it would not be a good thing to give away control to the likes of neoliberals like Mitterrand and Kohl. It was voted down, but then in 1993 the vote was held again for the Maastricht Treaty. This time the ruling parties got what they were looking for, and that very night the city sounded like a place at war on the streets of Copenhagen. The air was full of anger, the reasons for it clear. It had been voted down only just last year, and now we're just supposed to give our sovereignty away to institutions that don't care what people have to say on the streets of Copenhagen. Stones flew, windows broke, more than many folks could bear as the riot cops fired tear gas in the air. Before the night was over, the cops stood right there in that spot, fired pistols at the crowd. 11 people were shot on the streets of Copenhagen. When hard-won rights are lost, when ruling parties throw them out, they may pretend to wonder what the riots are about. But anywhere near Norrebro, you find few who disagree about exactly what happened that night in 1993 on the streets of Copenhagen. On the streets of Copenhagen. Stick around Scandinavia for the next song. There's some after the great financial crisis of 2008, a lot of things got very hard for a lot of people, and that also happened in Iceland. But in Iceland, they took a different approach than a lot of the most everywhere else in the world. There was a few years where if you saw a headline in the news that said, banker begins serving prison sentence, the next line was always Reykjavik, Iceland, you know, because they were the only country that was jailing their bankers. And I thought this was, I'm not a big fan of prisons, but suddenly it seemed like not such a bad idea. Iceland is an island with 500,000 or so Vikings, mostly known for volcanoes, hot springs, and fishing, known for its welfare state for being good and socialistic, certainly not known for being corrupt or nepotistic, but in the USA and Europe, when they were deregulating banks, Iceland's politicians took bribes and joined their ranks. Soon you had a situation one would think just couldn't be. A bank whose debt was worth 10 times the country's GDP. When Wall Street imploded, sure enough it spread. Banks all over the world were floating in the red. All over the world, governments made the plan to cut spending and raise taxes on the working woman and working man. The banks were bailed out while the people had to pay. But in Iceland, people thought there must be a better way. And the earth stood still a moment. Fear was struck in every toff. When Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. That's the chorus. It's a sing-along. They're all sing-alongs. Folks were in the streets in Reykjavik and just couldn't be ignored. They said, this is a debt we Icelanders can't afford. Let's guarantee deposits of all our people, yes indeed. But as for all the speculators motivated by their greed to make really dumb investments, to them Iceland said, good luck. Sorry for your losses, but we don't really give a fuck. The 1% all trembled when they took away the trough. When Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. Gordon Brown called them terrorists, said we cannot let this stand. Who do these peace-neck blondes think they are in Iceland? He threatened isolation and economy in flames. But the Icelanders said, sorry, but the banks can settle their own claims. Though that might be harder for them now that they're under house arrest. Or else they fled the country as they were most unwelcome guests. And now Reykjavik's recovery just makes the fat cat scoff. Since Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. Lovely. If you haven't heard of this example, perhaps there's a reason why the owners of the world don't want this kind of shit to fly. They say we all must pay up in this shakedown by the mob if we can't afford to pay the rent because we don't have a job. They say it's not their problem if we're forever shackled by their debt. We must save the 1% from the fate they should have met. But there is an alternative, though it makes the fat cats cough, since Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. Since Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. One of the great things and terrible things about traveling is you get to find out about local events that that you wouldn't find out about otherwise. And a lot of times they're really amazing, wonderful local events and local history. Other times they're terrible. I was in Belgium a few years ago and wrote a song about the news of the day that I was there. Was invaded and destroyed. Then they had a baby boy. They sold everything they owned so they might escape the war zone. They took the Baltic route north and west. It was the one
The smuggler said was best. They got as far as Germany, which is where they had another baby. It's a deadly thing, what some call immigration. England was their final destination. In a crowded van, driving to the port, on past Flanders fields, yet another life cut short. Cops on every side, the vehicle surrounded. When the loud crack sounded, Mama held her daughter tight in place. Then she saw the bullet hit her face. And Mauda was her name. Mauda was her name. There are many ways to stop a van, many ways to do it they can. Make a roadblock for one. If you're under fire, you can use your gun. But all the bullets flew in one direction. At first they denied it, but at closer inspection, the cop was aiming for the driver's head. But he missed and hit the girl instead. And Mauda was her name. Mauda was her name. If the driver had been hit, how many more numbers would be added to the score of those who only wanted to raise a family but then died on the shores of Turkey, or somewhere in the desert, or tortured in a prison, or on the bottom of the ocean, at a Baghdad checkpoint, or at a traffic stop, or gunned down by a Belgian cop. And Mauda was her name. Mauda was her name. Mauda was her name.
It's good feeding season on mosquitoes. The mosquitoes are feeding. It's like the sun's going down, right? So that's their favorite time. They seem to like me tonight. They usually don't, but usually I swat them away. But
I was going to introduce while you were so this one, well we think that the most famous Australian is the one that people probably know about, and this is someone who's famous because of telling the truth and who's in jail because of telling the truth, and I'm going to leave it there.
Behind these prison walls, there's a man who's won awards for the work that he has done and all that it affords, such as the knowledge of the horrors committed in our name. They can't stop the message, so the messenger gets blamed. Behind these prison walls, in solitary confinement, in a land of rolling hills and royalty and other such refinement is someone who is a hero to whistleblowers everywhere, who helped them tell the world of the crimes of Tony Blair. Behind these prison walls, you will find a mortal man. The reason why we know what happened in Afghanistan, when the soldiers of the empire, whose sunset long before, were torturing civilians in their terror war. Behind these prison walls is a part of WikiLeaks, an eloquent orator, but you won't hear him speak. Locked away in silence, one who knows too well how those in power act when there's another war to sell. Behind these prison walls is one who stands accused of exactly what offenses the U.S. has refused to say precisely which, or to try to clear the mist, or to explain how he's not the same as other journalists. Behind these prison walls is a person they deprive of most of the things in life that keep us all alive. A person being tortured as we stand here now for revealing the war crimes. Why, when, where, how? Behind these prison walls, our very right to be informed of what the hell is going on is the teacup in this storm. With knowledge there is power, so the solution by the crown, a 24-hour-a-day indefinite lockdown. Behind these prison walls.
Back in the 1830s, after Mexico abolished slavery, the United States decided that they had to invade Mexico for abolishing slavery, although they didn't say that's why they were doing it. Became unproductive land, so to speak. So then the great Northeast became the great Southwest, as it happened.
My name is John Riley, I'll have your ear only a while. I left my dear home in Ireland, it was death, starvation, or exile. When I got to America, it was my duty to go enter the army and slog across Texas to join in the war against Mexico. And it was there in the pueblos and hillsides that I saw the mistake I had made. Part of a conquering army with the morals of a bayonet blade. And there amidst all these poor dying Catholics, screaming children, the burning stench of it all, myself and 200 Irishmen decided to rise to the call. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. died, so we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. Marched neath the green flag of St. Patrick, emblazoned with Erin Golbra, bright with the harp and the shamrock and the Libertad para Republica. Just 50 years after Wolf Tone, 5,000 miles away, the Yanks called us a legion of strangers, and they can talk as they may. But from Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied, so we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We fought them in 5 major battles. Churubusco was the last. Overwhelmed by the cannons from Boston, we fell after each mortar blast. Most of us died on that hillside in the service of the Mexican state. So far from our occupied homeland, we were heroes and victims of fate. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side.
Jacob Blake was walking to his SUV. Alton Sterling was selling DVDs. Eric Garner had just broken up a fight. Breonna Taylor was asleep in the middle of the night. Tamir Rice was playing in the park. Elijah McLean was out walking after dark. Dominique Clayton was sleeping in her bed when she was shot by a cop in the back of her head. Say their names. Say their names. Say their names. Say their names. Walter Scott was driving to a store. Betty Jones was answering her door. Philando Castile was driving home with his girlfriend. Anthony Hill was naked on the grass when he met his end. Ed Selford was walking in his neighborhood. Michael Brown was blown away just standing where he stood. Kendra James was shot to death at a traffic stop by yet another unaccountable killer cop. Say their names. Say their names. Say their names. Say their names. Atiana Jefferson was playing a video game with her little nephew, gunned down just the same. Oscar Grant was celebrating the new year, handcuffed when the shots rang out that everyone could hear. Eric Reason pulled into a parking spot. Not long after that was when he was shot. George Floyd was just shopping in a store. Micah Xavier Johnson thought he was still at war. Say their names. 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 So I, when I first came to Denmark, or about a year after I first came to Denmark, I started playing regularly in Ungdomshuset and various other wonderful institutions. But that one especially became it was always one of my favorite places to play. The old Ungdomshuset in particular was a wonderful, wonderful space full of wonderful people who are actually generally extremely attentive and acted a lot like you guys are acting, but they all wore black and had piercings, and none of them drank to excess, which is interesting when you visit the new Ungdomshuset. It's not like that. They drink a lot now. They didn't used to actually drink so much. The autonomous culture back then was a bit different, but the communists always drank a lot, but that crowd didn't. Now the anarchists drink too. But when there was the whole struggle going on to save Ungdomshuset from being destroyed, and then all the marches after that, before the new house, there was just so much happening in Denmark. It was always a great time to visit Denmark. It was never a bad time, like, as long as you were here on a Thursday. Because, you know, that's when the marches were happening. But before the old Ungdomshuset was destroyed, the punks decided to have a naked cafe. They set up in Norrebro, where all the fancy cafes are, during lunchtime, and they set up to have a cafe themselves. But it had like only a frame of a building with no walls, and none of the people inside the cafe had clothing on, which was by far the most naked punks I've ever seen in one place. And the whole point was, I don't know what the point was, actually, but the plan was to have this naked cafe for 10 minutes, and I think the idea was to attract possibly the attention of either the press or the police or the public, but nobody gave a shit. Everybody was completely like, the naked punks in Denmark actually get no notice at all. So then, after 10 minutes, I was supposed to sing this song. And it pretty much went as planned, except for there was a kebab shop across the street who was not impressed by all these naked punks and started handing out eggs for his customers to throw at us. So, but they I think they generally missed. They might have been trying to miss, too. I'm not sure. They missed my guitar, which is the thing I really noticed. I don't drive a car because they run on gas, but if I did, it'd run on biomass. I ride a bike or sometimes a skateboard. So fuck off all you drivers and your yuppie hordes sitting all day in the traffic queues. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't eat meat. I just live on moldy chives or the donuts that I found in last week's dumpster dives. Look at you people in that restaurant. I think you are so sad when you could have been eating bagels like the ones that I just had. I think it is a shame all the bourgeois things you do. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't wear leather. And I like my clothes in black. And I made a really cool hammock from a moldy coffee sack. I like to hop on freight trains. I think that is so cool. It's so much funner doing this than being stuck in school. I can't believe you're wearing those brand new shiny shoes. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't have sex. And there will be no sequel, because heterosexual relationships are inherently unequal. I'll just keep on moshing to anti-flag and crass until there are no differences in gender, race, or class. All you brainwashed breeders, you just haven't got a clue. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't believe in leaders, I think consensus is the key. I don't believe in stupid notions like representative democracy. Whether or not it works, I know it is the case that only direct action can save the human race. So when I see you in your voting booth, then I know it's true. I'm a better anarchist than you.
I am not a pacifist. I like throwing bricks. And when the cops have caught me and I've taken a few licks, I always feel lucky if I get a bloody nose, because I feel so militant and everybody knows. By the time the riot is all through, I'm a better anarchist than you. I'm a better anarchist than you.
But actually, we're really big fans of direct action. And and one of the most, maybe the most exciting thing I've come across in my travels to the places I go in mainly North America, Australia, and Northern Europe, but between the countries I've been to in the past few years, some of the most exciting stuff is actually happening in England. And although I love the millions of people in the streets in France, and, well, that's maybe more exciting. But what's been happening in England has been a group working under the banner of Palestine Action has been trespassing on the factory floors of a company called Elbit Systems, which is very active here in Denmark as well. And Elbit Systems in England mainly manufactures arms and ammunition for the Israeli military. And by doing that, they are breaking international law, because that's what Israel is doing every day. And so they're also breaking British law. So it's very complicated for them to actually sell these arms to Israel, because it's technically illegal because of the war crimes that Israel keeps on committing, according to the United Nations. And Britain is actually a member of the United Nations, fancy that. So, it's a problem. So every time they try to convict people for trespassing onto the factories and smashing stuff with sledgehammers for days and doing millions of dollars worth of damage, they usually lose the court, the crown. The prosecution loses most of the cases. There's been dozens of them. They keep losing. They just won a couple of them recently. So that may be changing. I mean, the bad guys, the prosecutors. But generally, they've been losing. And the good guys have been winning. And I wrote them a theme song. Protests were going on, they were going on for years. And then Palestine Action started smashing up the gears. And that's when the people got up off of their seats, stuck their families into town and blockaded the streets. For 3 days and nights you could hear the hammers swing, though no one knew for sure what the future might bring. They knew one thing for certain, these weapons of war must not be sent to the ports they're heading for. So this is a note to Elbit Systems: you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. After smashing up equipment and smashing a whole bunch, a lot of folks began developing a hunch. The cops took 3 full days to send anyone inside, and after 15 hours they let the charges slide. It seems the prosecutors understood the climb: British companies aiding and abetting war crimes. The factory in Oldham had to close its gate, and the muralists in Palestine said that's smashing great. So this is a note to Elbit Systems: you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. All around the country, hammers being swung, showing civil disobedience is stronger than the tongue. Taking action here so the weapons go nowhere, so they don't get sent to the IOF, cause we know what they'll do there. And so does the Prime Minister and the men who he supports, selling weapons to war criminals who don't want to go to court, who don't want to face the facts of what they've done, where the bullets go when they're fired from the guns. So this is a note to Elbit Systems: you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. This is a note to Elbit Systems: you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. When the sledgehammers of justice come to town. Unadikum. deacon. We'll stick on that theme here. It's just the double standards of the West are just pretty horrific, and I'll just leave it at that. But the big allies are committing so many crimes against humanity that don't get into the news. I saw millions of people trapped behind ghetto walls. I saw the soldiers shooting every Friday afternoon. I saw some exposed to sickness with others made immune. I saw the tear gas in Al-Aqsa, eyes open wide. I saw the mob attack the motorist and beat him till he died. I heard the generals lying. I saw the tanks moving in. I heard the settlers shouting, "Let the killing begin." Look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky there by the sea. So much like New York City. I heard the wailing voices of the dying and forlorn, of the kids who couldn't get out and those who weren't warm. I saw all the schools and hospitals in pieces there still from the last time the IOF came to maim and kill. I saw the brave children with piles of rocks facing tanks demolishing city blocks. What's left of the grove but some sap as they try to wipe Palestine off the map. Look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky there by the sea. So much like New York City. I heard the DNC and all the Republicans too pledge allegiance to Netanyahu. I heard the president starting the story with rockets launched from a ghetto where people live in rubble, starved by an embargo. I saw a whole lot of crocodile tears on display for the zillionth time. I heard politicians say, "Can both sides please de-escalate? On one side are the occupied, on the other an apartheid state." Look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky there by the sea. So much like New York City. I heard them marching, chanting, "Kill them all." I saw millions of people trapped behind ghetto walls. We got, my favorite holiday is definitely May Day, hands down. And was it seven? Yeah. And I've spent, I think 17 of the past 20 May Days I have spent in Denmark. And it's been just a wonderful time to visit Denmark because there's red flags all over the country and festivals happening at the same time from morning till the end of. So we do little miniature tours of Denmark starting at 8:30 in the morning in Copenhagen, ending at 9 at night in Aalborg. That's, I've done it in the past. It's been a while. The pandemic kind of messed that up. But maybe it'll happen again. But I wrote a love song for May Day anyway. Month of the year, on the 1st of May, known around the world as International Workers' Day. You'll still see people marching in every corner of the earth. St. John to Santiago, Kerala to Perth, all keeping alive the fantasy, what could happen down the line. When the workers of the world combine,
see us gathering early in the morn. Some are celebrating the shackles we have shorn, while so many billions are just waiting for the moment that we might stop losing the class war. When someday we can all say, yeah, we're doing fine. When the workers of the world combine. When that time arrives, maybe it looks like May Day, like a festival that comes home and doesn't go away. Every race and gender, every walk and station, with the working class united, every land and nation. Then just watch what happens when we follow the same sign. When the workers of the world combine. The fifth month of the year, on the 1st of May, known around the world as International Workers' Day.
So I was in another document, yeah. So I'll do a we'll do a little song about some history going back to the 18 teens, which was a very notable time here in Denmark since the British sank the Danish fleet or stole the Danish fleet. I'm not exactly sure if sank or stole or both. I have to look into this. I've heard different accounts. But preemptively, just in case Denmark might join Napoleon. But so Napoleon had been, the France was distracted with the Napoleonic Wars when the United States decided to invade Canada because Canada was harboring escaped slaves, which is one of the main reasons the U.S. attacked other countries back at that time in 1812. They had just invaded Florida the year before for the same reasons, which was run by Spain nominally at the time. But the U.S. invaded Canada, destroyed Canada's capital city, which at the time was called York, which is now called Toronto, burned it to the ground. And a couple years later, Britain got around to retaliating. And that did not go well for the U.S. The Supreme Court, the White House, and the Congress were all burned down in the same day. And it was quite a good day for the construction industry. So I was, I knew about this, but I was, but I didn't know the details. And I was in a little Irish village in Ross Trevor visiting my friend Tommy Sands, brilliant songwriter who lives in Ross Trevor. And I was wandering around one rainy January day and came across a monument. And to the right of the monument, there's a little plaque. And I looked at the plaque, and as I approached the plaque, it became a little more surreal as I realized that I was looking at a picture of the White House in flames, and which is not something you expect to see in a little Irish village, actually. And, I mean, Belfast, perhaps, maybe somewhere, but not in Ross Trevor. There's, like, you know, scones and tea, you know, you don't, you know. But so I went back to Tommy's place and I said, you know, the guy who burned down the White House is buried has a monument here in Ross Trevor. And he said, yes, he was from Ross Trevor. His family, the town was named after his family, and he was like a rich Protestant military general whose family had stolen the town. So he's not well liked in Ross Trevor. And but Tommy was asked to write a song about Robert Ross, General Robert Ross, and he turned them down politely and said, I just can't think of anything nice to say about the guy. But when I heard about this, I thought, well, no, I can say something nice about this guy. So Robert Ross was from Ross Trevor. He was born in County Down. His family was given land there by the British Crown. He was a man born of the gentry, born with wealth and fame. But he joined the British Army to serve his queen and make his name. In the Napoleonic
wars. He fought in many lands, in Holland and in Spain, in the far-off Egyptian sands. He was wounded there in battle, came back to fight another day, and he was sent off to attack the USA. York had been sacked and burned by invading Yankee men, but the Canadians regrouped, chased the Yankees home, and then the British Navy made its way to the shores of DC town, where General Ross burned the White House down. The year was 1814. The U.S. was in retreat. It was a Canadian victory, an American defeat. Without the French to help them, they got their ass whipped by the crown when General Ross burned the White House down. The place had just been constructed only 12 years before, but it had to be rebuilt soon after this disastrous war. The president turned tail and ran like a raggedy clown when General Ross burned the White House down. Was killed a few months later. Irish rebels stopped him in his tracks. He was buried in Nova Scotia, in the town of Halifax. He might have been forgotten, but he'll forever be renowned. He's the man who burned the White House down. He's the man who burned the White House down.
Long before Pablo Neruda was a famous poet and was a big advocate for Chilean social democracy, for the government of Salvador Allende, in the 1930s, Pablo Neruda was the Chilean ambassador to France. And it was very good timing for that job. This is what he did and organized in 1939. Across the ocean wide, where many it's take two. How does it go? Yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah. I just wrote this song a couple years ago. You'd think I'd remember it by now. Across the ocean wide, where many ships have been. No, I still don't. Across the ocean wide, where many ships have been, where many long remember those passengers within. All of those whose families are buried or in jail in the killing fields of Spain. When the Winnipeg set sail. Across the open seas, a world better than the camps, the French authorities threw the people in, and if they lived to tell the tale, they'd be the lucky few. When the Winnipeg set sail. Across the ocean wide, the ship was met at bay by the throngs of people who just had to come that day. In 1939, to cheer and cry and say all hail solidarity. When the Winnipeg set sail. When the Winnipeg. Across the ocean wide was where they had to flee. The thousands upon thousands of Spanish refugees from the lands of Europe where humanity had failed to the shores of Valparaiso. When the Winnipeg set sail. Across the ocean wide was where they would remain as dictatorship would rule for half a century in Spain. Torpedoed in 42, now it lies upon the shale. One voyage will outlive her when the Winnipeg set sail. When the Winnipeg set sail. Across the ocean wide. Thank you very much. Well, I don't, is somebody going to tell us to stop when it's been an hour? Because I actually didn't look at when we started, and I don't want to cut into the next act. But I feel like it's probably been. We'll just continue. We'll just keep going until somebody tells us to stop. But I know, I'm not trying to be a stage hog or anything. Co-wrote this song with Arundhati Roy, but I haven't told her about it yet. Like an old cloth torn and fraying, it came like a clarion call to illustrate the same. United we stand, divided we fall. A thin veneer torn by disease shredded the great con laid bare. Come from across the seas, now floating in the air, like a corpse that's lying exposed, that all of us now can see, all that the cadaver shows about a society. The veil of fantasy lifted, that gives us at least some idea how another world is possible. I can hear her breathing now. Like the red blood that flows from the bullet, whether coated in rubber or not, like the faces you see in the helmet, reflecting the thickening plot, driven by such a villain as a thing exponential allows. It says another world is possible, and I can hear her breathing now. End of the town, on the murals in so many places, boarded up and long ago shut down, making all the connections between the mule and the plow, that another world is possible, and I can hear her breathing now. Rising up coast to coast, with formations that brighten the skies, like Lord Thomas Jefferson's ghost, his victims no longer disguised, as his visage falls into the river, like the skull of an old sacred cow, that says another world is possible. I can hear her breathing now.
Another world is possible.
Another world is possible. I can hear her breathing now. Very good, very good, very good. We'll do one more. Thanks so much for having us here. It's been such a pleasure. If you know anybody in Copenhagen, we're playing at Halmtorvet 54 at the Anarchist Bookshop, in front of it, in the sidewalk next to the St. Pauli Bar, tomorrow at 6 o'clock. And then we go off to England, Scotland, and Ireland. When the world has gone crazy, and it's all becoming clear, when they're gunning down our comrades, and it seems the end is near, as they're loading up the launchers for the tear gas grenades, we can take off our bandanas and kiss behind the barricades. When it's madness all around, and you can see this at a glance, we will sing and we will cry, we will laugh and we will dance. As they shout their marching orders beneath the helicopter blades, we shall seize the moment for a kiss behind the barricades. They will try to break our spirit, and at times they may succeed, but our love for the world is stronger than their greed. When the building is surrounded and hope begins to fade, in my final hour, a kiss behind the barricades. As the movement grows, there will be hills and bends, but at the center of the struggle are your lovers and your friends. And the more we hold each other up, the less we can be swayed. Here's to love and solidarity, and a kiss behind the barricades. Tusen takk. If we have time, we'll do a quick one. There's a community center in London named after the guy that this song is about, but it doesn't use the name that he used for himself. It uses another name, because the name that he used for himself was just too powerful to even speak in some circles. From the bottom of the ladder, end of the line. His mother died when he was three. Soon after came his dad. After that he lost the only brother that he had. When the World War came, he signed up, traveled far. When it was over, he came home to Amritsar. He was serving water to all the people gathered in the garden for the festival. When the soldiers opened fire between the four walls filled with thousands of families, 1,000 people killed, he began to organize with others lifelike mind. Then he knew he had to leave his home behind. Ram Mohammed Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. He was called many names, one his comrades knew was written on his arm in the form of a tattoo. He spent years in prison, arrested by the crown. The leader of his party by the British was gunned down. From India to Africa he ventured forth. Finally he made it to the north. Ram Mohammed Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. Of India at Westminster had assembled, including the butcher of Punjab, the governor general. Security was tight, but he managed to hide a revolver in his bag. As he got inside, he pointed his pistol and he aimed it well. As he walked up to the lectern, the governor fell. Ram Mohammed Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. Ram Mohammed Singh Azad didn't try to run. He awaited his arrest and was taken off to prison in the year of 1940. The 31st of July, they put a noose around his neck, and in Pentonville he died. Hindus, Sikhs, and Muslims and others gathered round in Punjab, where they laid his ashes in the ground. Ram Mohammed Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. Ram Mohammed Singh Azad went across the sea to strike a blow in the cause of liberty. Born in Punjab in 1899. Tusen tak. Hope to see you in Copenhagen tomorrow. You're from Copenhagen.